forever. Dog.
The goody goody. Sabrina Jellies. The goody goody. You're listening to the goody goody. The year 2019. The situation, I'm writing on Big Mouth with my friend Joel Kim. The other situation, we both got cast in network shows while we were in the writer's room. What a celebration!
Airstrike, standing by.
I love Joel Kim, and you will too, so listen to our chat that we had in our backyard, in the backyard, under the tree, on the deck. Enjoy.
What an iconic duo we are right now.
We're truly
an iconic
duo. A
star from the top-rated new comedy.
Yes.
On network television, and a star of the lowest-rated premiere in NBC history. Can you believe that they got us together?
I love how scathing and real and honest you are. Like, just like that is...
Well, I mean, here's the thing.
You texted me as soon as the ratings came out.
Here's the thing. Like, I want to be a headline, babe. Okay? If I'm not the top, I need
Let
to
be the
bottom,
babe. Okay. Were you?
I do not flip.
Do you really deal with that in like the most? I mean, I kind of, we were just talking about how as stand-ups that are working as actors, we really have like a different,
I think we cope with
the physiology of all this is different for us.
For sure.
Because this was like, even the idea of like booking the pilot, it was like, woo, extra job. And then.
Yeah. I do feel like just sort of observing to how other people deal with this kind of stuff, or specifically actors who are just actors deal with this stuff, is I think like for us, we're always a little bit outside of our own lives, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like I...
Hollywood scoop! 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 Scoop!
And that's the Hollywood scoop! I do genuinely though feel that like I'm so used to just being an observer of my own life because of the way I write material and because of, you know, how I've cannibalized everything that I do and feel and think.
I definitely
material that like
can relate to that.
Yeah, so that,
and I've done ayahuasca adjacent journeys, and I feel like, are you interested in that kind of thing? Do you feel that like you removed you?
I absolutely am. I honestly, it's why ketamine is like my favorite drug to do when I'm out, is because I need to dissociate a little bit sometimes.
You always joke on Twitter about how you can't believe that you are on network TV with the way you talk. But I mean, it's so amazing how honest and open you are. Where you're
well,
like,
the good thing about laying the groundwork for all of that my entire career is that like they hired me and they knew who they hired me. And I have no idea like what kind of job offers I'm not getting because of this. But
sponsorship of Dove. Yeah. Sponsorship of Neutrogena.
I don't think
the soaps, baby.
A child's game show is going to ask me to host anytime soon. But I do think...
I did host a kid's game show, and I was so scared to come out of the closet because of it. But then everyone who made the show was also gay, and that was refreshing. But I never came out to the kids, and it's a regret I'll have to live with.
And that's how you live forever, dog.
So you never... I know your background is that... is like super like your family that adopted you was very religious.
Yeah.
I guess it's like, have you always been like, well, fuck all of your borders and boundaries?
I think no. Like, so when I came out, I had the very religious upbringing. I had the very strict conservative parents that were very controlling.
That's what you selected on the menu.
Mm-hmm. And I said, this, it's sort of an a la carte thing.
And where did you set it?
I set it.
What? Like, where's the setting of all these things?
Oh,
like,
you grew up at a 10.
At a 10.
At a 10.
Numbers wise, but like geographically.
Oh, in the Chicago suburbs, the wilds of the Midwest.
Okay, cool. And you said, all right, pop me in.
And I said, get me in there. Get me in that situation. But when I like, so I moved out when I was 17 and I like stayed with a friend for the rest of high school and then entered college completely a free agent. Like had no, was not tethered to my parents financially. Or personally at that point, like we were barely speaking.
Because
so,
after you came out, it was no, no, no.
It was no, no, no. And it was also like, I don't know. There was a lot of stuff.
When did
like,
you come out to them?
Well, they read my journal when I was 16.
Cool move. Very cool.
Or 17, I guess. I came out to my friends at school at 16. They, the next
and
year
And your mother
when I was
ugly
17.
And your sister ugly. You just plain old ugly.
When you were 17?
When I was 17. And then it's my relationship just slowly fell apart from there. And it was, you know, it's very simplistic to sort of centered around like the gay stuff, and it's very, and I think, you know, that's partially true, but it was a lot. It was like top to bottom, the whole thing had to go, babe. You know, like knock it out at the foundations of the juts of the, you know, the walls had to go, the floor needed to go, the ceiling needed to go, the whole thing. And so,
everything was renoed.
Yeah, it was just bad.
Was it remodeled?
Yeah, it was renoed, and we rebuilt, and like slowly throughout college. I mean, my relationship with my parents now is
that's like a really funny other show for you to sell is like an HGTV
Extreme
style
makeover.
Show, but it's about top to bottom gutting family relationships
yeah,
that need to be completely remodeled.
And just like from the top down. But yeah, I mean, we're much better now, but I do think that like not having to answer to anyone in any sort of way really helped me. And I think it was definitely at the early parts of my life like an overcorrective, just being like completely transparent, because I spent half my like adolescence hiding everything about me.
Yeah,
everything I wanted to do, you know, like I always wanted to be on television, and I hid that behind wanting to be a youth pastor, because I knew it would make them happy. And like,
and you know that that's usually the gateway into TV is like
youth pastor
your own
and
sitcom.
Then sort of, yeah,
that's where they scout.
Just straight into the multicam world. From
that's
you
so
being
sweet.
A youth,
oh my god, the sliding doors of your life of you as a youth pastor.
I mean, can you imagine
being like, sure guys, you get horny for ladies, but keep it under control.
I would have been great though. I think like the skill set,
I think
is
you would have
similar.
Had problems.
No, I think it would have been smooth sailing. I think I would have gotten married to my middle school crush. And
did you have,
yeah, I
you
had
know
a,
who you're picturing when
a,
you say that,
yeah. Alicia, I don't want to say her last
okay,
name.
Okay, don't say her last
but
name.
She was my password up until like
oh my
early
my
20s.
God.
Even like years beyond being out and like sucking dick, I still just out of habit, it was Alicia.
Like, Alicia 69.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. And then like, she was my password for a long time. And she ended up marrying my middle school best friend, actually. And it was weird to find that out at like 25 and feel betrayed, even though I'd spoken to neither of them in almost a decade.
Here's how I feel. I feel like my like Ravi Roy's, my Scott Stevenson's, the like crushes that I had, it wasn't not a crush. It was
no,
a crush.
Yeah.
Obsession based. Crush.
I really convinced myself that I was in love with her and that
but
like it, she was the answer
but
for
like,
a lot of
don't,
what.
But with like, because you were speaking the same like, sexuality is fluidly, we land on a spectrum somewhere.
Yeah.
You're not 100% gay. I'm not 100% gay.
Yeah.
We are much more gay than straight. So it makes sense that we are identifying as gay. But like, I do feel like those crushes were, it's when you are like really leaning on that, like whatever percentage. And it's weird to even break it down as percentage, because, you know, mm-hmm. it's more like not, like words don't describe what the.
Can I, this is like connected to sort of like what I've realized about myself and the way I interact with men now too, though, is that like, I have to say like, so she was like a beautiful, beautiful, like young woman. I think we met when I was like 14 or 15, and she was like truly gorgeous, and she like reciprocated this crush in a way that sort of shocked me, because I was such a faggy kid, you know,
yeah.
and like, and I'd been called that so many times and like was resented it and was like skinny and not like, not the kind of guys that like girls
not the buff.
Were going for. I was like not athletic, and yet she sort of, I don't know why, reciprocated it. And being desired by anybody for me, like, is a real big turn on. And so I wasn't sexually attracted to her back, but being desired like really did sort of like,
honestly,
get me
being
there,
desired
halfway there.
Is a turn on, and that is one goody goody lesson.
Lessons.
Being desired is a turn on.
It's true. And the thing is like, I've realized this too sexually about myself with men, like, you know, being like, you know, people always ask like, oh, are you a top or are you a bottom? And I think a lot of people assume that I'm a bottom. Because of race stuff. I think that's partially
I've already titled this podcast Bottom Speaks. I
Bottom
actually
speaks
wouldn't
out.
Necessarily.
It really, for me, is so, it comes down to like, if I understand the way that I am desired by somebody, I can be so into it. Like, I'm so down for whatever.
Yes.
As long as you make it clear, like, what you want. Like, because when a guy on the dance floor, like, there were guys, it was I was out on Saturday and they were like at this charity circuit party.
Oh my God, I was there.
Yeah. And it was like this huge circuit party that was also raised like $25,000 for these like this homeless youth charity.
Amazing.
And it was just like a regular party. Everyone, you know, in fucking jockstraps dancing around. And there were several guys like it would like if a guy like presents his ass to me and is like rubbing up against my dick and is like, yeah, and like into that, then I'm like, okay, yeah, I would fuck you right now. Absolutely.
Wow.
And but if a guy comes up behind me and is like rubbing his dick up against my ass and is like, I want to fuck you, I'm like, okay, yeah, great. You know? And so it really is like, for me.
But wait, what about their face, their personality, the way they smell?
I mean, that there's all, there has to be a baseline for me, like it's level not of just attraction. Any, what, no.
Just to clarify, it's not just anyone.
No. But in terms of like within the people, within the sphere of people that I'm attracted to.
Yes.
And within there, it's my like what I want to do sexually with that person is so much more based on how they're perceiving me. And like, how, it's like I need that sort of to see myself through their eyes and then I can get on board with whatever it is.
Interesting.
And I don't know how healthy that is, but
I'd say 100% healthy.
Great. Okay. Great. I'm going to go.
Yeah. I wonder. I don't know. I think, well, initially the way I was hearing what you're saying is that you like want it to be clear, like you want the sexual dynamics to be clear, but yeah. Then it seems like you're saying something deeper when you say the way they see me.
Yeah, I guess like I need like there I guess my like sexual identity is like sort of a blank if I'm just like in a vacuum. It's like I need that other person there to sort of like be like, I want to fuck you, or I want you to fuck me, and then sort of it's like,
you're like, oh, this, okay,
that.
This is what we're doing,
and then I sort of can go. I'm like I'm a sexual chameleon, like that. I sort of like blend in with whatever background I'm presented with.
With those rules, here you are at the circuit party. This is a fantasy. Okay. Alicia comes up behind you.
Whoa!
With a dildo.
Honestly.
Get it.
All right. No, I've been wanting to talk to you about this off pod for a while though, but I feel like the older I get, the more I'm like, I think I moved on from women too soon.
Well, I just think that society carved out our boxes based on like a very heteronormative understanding of what sexuality is. I mean, people, the way that I feel very into monogamy, and I think that it is. I think about it because, well, we had this Lyft driver yesterday that was like had this like polyamorous family, and like it was BDSM, and it was like she was talking about the power dynamics, and I'm just like, I'm listening and I'm curious, but I would be lying if I wasn't kind of like in my heart and mind being like, this sounds fucking like lunacy. It just didn't like it, and I'm not saying every polyamorous situation is that, but it's like there's the PR, the like advertisements out there doesn't bode well for straight and gay female couples. It's like a lot of, I feel like, not a balanced power situation. It's like one person fucking, and then another person being like, I'm so glad we did this.
Yeah. So it's interesting because I'm sort of like in. Well, I'm not really in a poly relationship because they live in San Francisco, but it's a couple.
Is it with a Lyft driver?
No, but it is a couple that I see like semi-frequently, and they've been together for a long time. And whenever
gay men, I think, are doing it in a different way.
I do, and it's weird because it's almost like not okay to say that.
I know that,
but
at the same time, doesn't it make sense to you when I say it?
Absolutely makes sense to me when you say it.
And I'm speaking from the same like the boxes that we were just acknowledging that have been painted
that have
around
been bad.
Us. Yes,
and like I get it, and I don't think that every gay couple. It's like yes, of course,
ooh,
every gay person.
That's the real deep shit. We did go really deep.
But like, yes, of course, every gay man is different. There is not like a prevailing, like, you know, because I'm sure there are gay men listening to this right now being like, fuck that. Like, I want monogamy. I want that.
No,
and it's
course,
like, yes, of course. But I have to say, like, I know so many guys who are in varying degrees of open relationships.
Yeah.
And it just for them. And this is the other thing. Like, if I were in a primary, if I were the like in a relationship with someone for 6 years, like these guys that I know in San Francisco that I've been like in this sort of thing with, I don't know that I could open it up. I don't know. I actually don't know how I feel about monogamy in terms of like myself, but
yeah, because in this moment I want to say like, there's certain things when we talk about like the norm and we're rebelling against the norm. There's certain things that are the norm because that's kind of, that's like through trial and error what has worked. I feel like with monogamy,
I don't necessarily agree with that. I think there's two things. I think that like monogamy does genuinely work for a lot of people, and I think that there are people who are not open to it because they've been conditioned by a sort of like heteronormative, like yes. We see monogamy everywhere. Monogamy yes. is the norm, and I don't necessarily think that it's because it's better, like, or I think that there are some people who are who would be so much better suited for non-monogamy who are
sure,
who
yeah,
can
yeah,
never
yeah. No,
would never
I
be
believe,
able to access that.
Yes. Yes. Yes, yes, yes. I agree with that. I don't want to come off like I'm like because monogamy is best for me, I feel it's the best for everyone. That is clearly not the case. However, I think that just the way it is interesting to be like queer and open-minded and all these things, but then still there's also just like certain probabilities with gender or with like there's like, for instance, this is like I'm going way out to come back in, but like Wolfie is a year and a half and the boys that you meet that are his age, including him, are like, he just said please earlier in the kitchen when I gave him water and it was like so sweet. It's like he said please. But then if you go to his daycare, the girls that are a year and a half are like, climate change is crazy. They're, you know, like the girls are like way ahead, and it's really like, you know, that's it's unignorably different for these two genders. And not to say that there's not boys, I know like Chelsea Peretti's son is like memorizing books. It's not to say that that's not, you know, that's everyone, but I feel probability wise when it comes to men, their attitudes within their bodies and what's marketed to them and what's how they're told to be sexually, all of it adds up to a situation where when I see two men who have opened up their relationship, I don't have any instinctual feelings. When it's two women or a straight couple, I'm sort of immediately start thinking about how the power
yeah
is imbalanced.
Well, no, and listen,
and that's what I'm worried. That's always because I've only ever seen in, you know, it's only been examples for me of like one person that's really like getting it and free and has multiple partners, and another person who's really like, yeah, I'm zen about it, I'm chill. And it's
well,
like,
and you,
you can tell it's eating
you touched
not-
about the you touched on this like within your explanation for this defense of your disgusting
my
ideology
fucking disgusting ideology
is how much of this is nature versus nurture, of like how much of it is we just socialize boys differently because we perceive them to be boys, and how mm-hmm. much of it is ingrained genetic differences in gender. And that's like a discussion that is too crazy for either of us cisgender people to like wow. really have, because like we're not
so true.
But I mean, who knows? You know, it's like, it's a question, like, that's the question that I always go back to. And the other thing about the power imbalance is the thing is like, I've observed gay open relationships where it's clearly like, it feels like sometimes non-monogamy is like the gay male version of having a baby to save the relationship. You know, it's like that last ditch effort thing that you do that just ultimately ends up
we're having
exploding.
Sex with other people.
Yeah. exploding the relationship.
Is but that the pattern that you see a lot, is like, it starts out as monogamous and then like as you, because I also feel like that's probably, that makes sense. Like you build trust and then you start like,
yeah, I mean, I also know people who really just like did monogamy for like 2 weeks and then like yeah. were like, no, this isn't for us. And yeah. the thing is like every open and I talk about this in my set now, but it's real. Every open relationship and every monogamous relationship is a little bit different. Like they're not all created equally. And when I look at the non-monogamous relationships
to accept
in my life, like it's also true. Like the guys that I'm like sleeping with right now, like the thing I love about fucking them both is that while we're having sex, you can really tell that they're in love with each other. Like they're just aww. So into each other while the three of us are having sex, that it is like genuinely like, oh, it's good, because like you're just like psycho into each other still.
That's
and
sweet.
I'm not here as like because one
to,
of
like,
you likes me better
that. Yeah
and it's not yeah and it's not to like reignite something that you have for each other. Like you are obsessed with each other, and then I'm also here and I provide something a little bit different too. And it was just like nice, like over the weekend, to just like be on the couch, like watching movies with them. Like it was like normal, but not. And it just felt
good. Do they have a nice place?
I have an amazing place. They live in like a fucking full house, like apartment in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And it does. But I will say, like, coming down from Molly, like after that weekend, and like texting them being like, oh, how's your come down? And they're like, oh, we're good. We're just like at home, like cuddling and like just trying to take it easy. And I got like so mad. I was like, well, I have fucking no one. I have fucking no one to do that with. Oh. So how dare you? Like,
yeah.
And I was like, well, this is the problem for of this situation for me, is that like, I wonder how, and I wonder if it would work, or because like I have these patterns where like I got back on Tinder last night,
mm-hmm.
and I want to be the first person to ever say that Tinder is a nightmare. And
oh my God,
I know,
this
it's
insight.
Crazy. But,
we have insight from the wilderness.
But my thing is like anytime someone like shows interest in me, I'm like, what's wrong with you? And I immediately lose interest for them. And I wonder if that same pattern would hold true for these guys if they lived in the same city, or if part of
the
distance that I'm able to keep from them, and part of that, and part of them being in a relationship
at
all.
That was your love catchphrase.
Oh yeah.
As soon as you like me, I don't like you.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I used to do that with guys, and I thought when I like the first relationship that I had was with this woman that was in a relationship. And I thought, well, this is like how I justified it, was like, oh, this is fine, because like, I'll just get this gay out of my system.
Mm-hmm.
Be French braiding my hair in no time. But that I thought like as soon as she liked me back that it would be over. But then it wasn't. But for you, was it that way with girls, too?
No. I mean,
it's just been like that way.
Alicia
like,
was really like the last stop on that train for me. Yeah. And I've never really.
You did kissing, fingering.
Kissing, but fingering came like 5 years after I came out. On my 21st birthday, I fingered two girls because I got so fucked up.
Good boy.
And yeah, I was great at it. I was natural.
Great.
Came like accumulatively between the two of them like 16 times.
16 times?
I'm kidding. No one enjoyed it. Okay. Dry as a bone. Everyone was mad.
I'm so glad that you were kidding, because even if you did make them come, 16 times is so many times. I'm just picturing these two.
But no, yeah, I don't know. I think it's I've never been in a relationship with a man.
What?
Never had a boyfriend.
Yeah.
That's the wrong sound effect for
I
that
know.
Revelation.
it was a sarcastic, oh yeah. It's oh well, I guess people what why do you think?
Well, for
we've
one,
got the thing of when people like you, you
there's that. I
don't
mean, there's
like
definitely
them.
That,
which is probably like a self-love thing.
A couple things, yeah. I mean, there's definitely that, but like, I think too, like, I've been career focused my entire like life. I've always had to hustle because I've been in, you know, such deep student loan debt, and like always needed health insurance.
What, how deep debt?
I could have
more
bought
than 100,000.
Just under it because of interest.
Wow.
And I just, thank you, NBC. If nothing else comes out of this show, I paid off my student loan debt.
Oh,
and I paid about.
Oh, my God. Yes.
It
also,
doubled.
Not the right sound effect.
It doubled in size because of interest over time.
And
I was paying
so,
so much. But it, regardless, like, so I was always like very focused. It's a small school in Illinois.
Oh, fuck
not
you,
even
small
worth,
school in
not
fuck.
Even worth the like number. It's embarrassing how much I ended up paying for my education. But again, I was coming into it completely financially severed from my parents. And so I sort of had this mentality of like, oh, I should take out as many loans as I can get.
Yeah.
And sort of be able to live like, you know, the rest of my friends were living.
Yeah.
With being supported by their parents. But
well, good for you. You paid it off?
I did. I paid it off this
oh
year. And
my
only
God.
Because of the NBC show.
Yes.
but like, I don't know. So I was always like, okay, I was always working. Like when
That's
I was
so
in
good.
New York, when we met in New York and we were yeah. doing, I was doing like 2 to 3 open mics a night, but also working 50 hours a week at a startup
oh
because
God.
I was like, I need to be making $50,000 a year at
least. What kind of startup?
I worked at Groupon for four and a half years. I worked for a POS system for restaurants that was on an iPad for a year. I worked for a men's sock company at a WeWork for
There's no time to date.
No, there was no time to date. I was like doing that. I was also like when I wasn't at Mike's, I was like writing spec scripts for the day that I would eventually get fucking staffed. I was like very focused on getting to like essentially where I am now. And now it doesn't even feel like anything is slow. I feel like I've just like gotten myself into this habit. And like, I don't know. I hate dating.
Yeah, it's like you've got to kind of like add a piece in.
Yeah.
And it's like hard because it's your time now is so valuable that adding kind of like an audition for a person.
Yeah. I really, my dream is to like meet someone at an orgy, have sex with them several times, and then see them out socially at a party and be like, oh, hey. And then like start hanging out in groups.
I like that
many
story
times.
For you.
And then like through group hangs, like eventually, because like to meet someone fresh for a first date from like a Tinder or something like that.
Fresh.
Is such a nightmare to me.
Outside of an orgy.
Yeah.
I
would much rather have sex with someone like without speaking a fucking word to them and then starting from there than sitting across from someone at a restaurant and talking to them.
Yeah, but that
so,
might be the more natural build but you also might not be someone who wants to be in, if it doesn't feel like you necessarily want to be in a relationship right now, aside from like coming down from Molly and wanting someone to hold you.
The only reason I downloaded Tinder is because of the Molly come down.
The only thing is like, it'll maybe is there a part of your heart that needs to open, you feel?
Yeah, I mean, my therapist is very much like, because I was like, I went in guns blazing a couple weeks ago to a session, and I was like, yeah, I'm not lonely though. Like, I don't feel an absence of a human being in my life. Like, I come home, I enjoy being alone. I enjoy living alone. And he was like, well, that's not loneliness. And I was like, what do you mean? And he was like, listen, all of these, because I was telling stories about how like I feel very like I keep walls up. To just like keep myself safe because I've been hurt before, and I'm sort of like, I'm not into like getting into an emotional
okay
like,
so you
thing
have opened
someone.
Your heart and been hurt.
Yeah,
it's just,
and
yeah.
And he's like, though, he's like, that is like the sort of the absence of vulnerability is loneliness. And then I've come to find that is like a Brené Brown line. But
what, say it again.
He's like, your absence of vulnerability, like the ways you protect yourself from being vulnerable, that is the manifestation
lessons.
Of loneliness in your life. Not like, he's like, for you, he's like, loneliness isn't just like feeling lonely isn't being like, oh, I wish there was a person next to me right now. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not it. It is like an absence of vulnerability. And I was like, okay, drag me.
Well, that's such an interesting thing because like the way this podcast started and just the way that I feel about you is that like you're able to be more open than everybody. Like there's a vulnerability to that, but it's just, you know, interesting how shaded things are and that in one part of your life, you're fully like, yeah, I did Kay, I did Molly, fucking these people. This is the way it looked. This is the way it felt, in a way that it would like horrify someone to like describe something so personal.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, when it comes to just like maybe holding someone's hand and being okay with it, it's a little bit more like.
Yeah, it is. It's harder. I guess like for me too, like I'm very much like, if I don't feel like I love you immediately, then I don't think it's ever going to happen. And like, if there's a moment,
I kind of think that that's not. I think that. I mean, I don't know what other like layers you put on meeting someone for the first time that maybe like curbs you from being able to go there. But I do think oftentimes when people are like just really trying to feel the feelings, it's not. That's your body and your heart told you from the beginning. It's not the person for you. Right.
Yeah.
But like those people that when you said that you've been hurt before, you have felt feelings.
Yeah. Like pretty immediately with them though. But then like quickly, like after like a month of mourning, like whatever, however it ended, I've been like, oh, that was not it. But also like and I've been trying to articulate this other places too, but like every time I do like catch feelings for somebody, I turn into a fucking crazy person. I hate.
Yeah, it's so
hard. I do not like spending time with myself when I am like obsessed with someone else.
All right, we've got drama. Ashley Tisdale thinks her Uber driver took her phone. But more drama comes in the next episode with Joel Kim on Thursday. Sabrina says,
I've got to find the Reddit about brown queer women.
Joel Kim says,
of course. Of quirks.
And you'll find out if Ashley's Uber driver took her phone. JK, you'll never know that, and neither will she. Good night.
Bye.
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 See you later.
Bye.
Watch Carol's second act to see the two of us, this dynamic chemistry. 9:30, Thursdays. On CBS, Why Can't I Let Go of this outro. Bye.
Forever. Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. Engineered and mastered by Alex Sarche. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.